It's overwhelming that 10,000 books were banned across the country last year.
And we always have to ask ourselves when we're shining a light on banned books, why are they banned? Whether it's because they explore and expose a history of racism in this country and in the world, or a guide to how to fight back the way our community did in the 80s and 90s. It's all about how we create community to fight back against the forces of repression and authoritarianism. And I think that really scares people to give young people the tools to fight back.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Malaysian cops mistake an official AIDS event for a gay sex party. A Hong Kong judge stalls a trans man's bathroom win. And censored books break free at Bandcamp. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 26th, 2025. Police in the Malaysian state of Kelantan are investigating themselves to determine how they managed to mistake a health ministry-sponsored HIV/AIDS awareness and prevention event for a so-called gay sex party. Kelantan Police Chief Datuk Maud Mamat Yusuf had trumpeted his June 17th raid on a bungalow in the village of Kota Baru. He displayed evidence consisting of confiscated condoms and HIV medications. Public tips and surveillance of the venue led them to expect more than 100 people in attendance, but only about 20 men were left to arrest when police arrived, and they were waiting for their voluntary test results. The gathering included sexual health and HIV-related information and free condoms to encourage safer sexual practices. The truth finally came out on July 19th when a coalition of civil rights groups backed by the Malaysian AIDS Council issued a press statement demanding that authorities correct the inaccurate statements immediately. All the detainees were forced to take urine tests to determine drug usage, but none tested positive. Three men were reportedly arrested on separate charges after alleged pornography was found on their mobile phones. The trans advocacy group Justice for Sisters led more than 30 civil rights groups in condemning the police falsehoods. Among them were Amnesty International Malaysia, the Malaysian Association of Women Lawyers, and Malaysia's Center for Independent Journalism. They charged police officials with the further stigmatization of LGBTQ people who are already subjected to discrimination, harassment, verbal abuse, and physical violence in the conservative, primarily Muslim nation.
Two statutes that criminalize Hong Kong's trans people for using sex-segregated public facilities have been struck down, but the ruling has been suspended for a year. Judge Russell Coleman cited the city charter's guarantee of equality before the law on July 22nd. However, he gave the government time to consider whether it wishes to implement a way to deal with the contravention. A transgender man, identified as Kay, filed the legal challenge in 2022. Kay sought to amend Hong Kong's Public Conveniences, Conduct and Behavior regulations to permit individuals undergoing medically supervised gender-affirming treatment to use public toilets that match their gender identity. The regulations currently criminalize anyone over the age of 5 for entering a public bathroom designated for the opposite sex. Judge Coleman suggested that the issue is more appropriately a matter for legislation. It's another incremental advance for trans people in the special administrative region of China. Hong Kong's government has in recent months relaxed rules to allow trans people to legally change their gender on official documents without undergoing gender-affirming surgery. The requirement that they be sterilized as part of that surgery was also dumped. They can apply to change the gender marker on their government documents after undergoing hormone replacement therapy for at least 2 years. The government has announced that it will carefully study the judgment and consult the Department of Justice on the appropriate follow-up action.
A non-binary U.S. citizen can temporarily stay in Canada after a judge delayed their removal proceedings. Angel Jenkel arrived from Minnesota in August 2022, but overstayed their six-month visitor visa to care for their ailing fiancé. Jenkel was set to be deported on July 3rd, but federal court Justice Julie Blackhawk decided that the immigration officer's flawed and unreasonable approach did not consider up-to-date information about the risks for queer people in the United States. Jenkel and their fiancé live in a part of London, Ontario, that allows him to be close to medical care for his frequent epileptic seizures. He requires 24/7 care. Jenkel told the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation that the threat of being sent back to Trump's America was just really stressful for me to think about going back to such an environment. Even their American-loving Southern grandmother expressed terror about their possible return. Sarah Michael of Smith Immigration Law in Toronto told the CBC how Jenkel reacted to Blackhawk's ruling.
This decision was a huge relief for Angel. I believe there was so much uncertainty that was leading into this and so much concern about returning back to the United States, given what the conditions are and how they're presently, you know, changing very quickly and becoming much more difficult to live in as a non-binary American.
Jenkel can now stay in Canada until a full judicial review of Blackhawk's decision is complete. If the result is favorable, then Jenkel's application to stay in Canada will be reopened and reviewed by a different immigration officer.
Gay Venezuelan makeup artist Andre Jose Hernandez Romero is back in his hometown. Romero had a tearful reunion with his parents on July 23rd in the village of Capacho Nuevo, where his entire town was waiting for him preparing a meal, according to Melissa Shepard, director of legal services at the Southern California-based Immigrant Defenders Law Center. Romero entered the U.S. legally last year and was following all the legal requirements to gain asylum because of anti-queer violence in his homeland. His mom and dad tattoos were falsely interpreted as the marks of the deadly Tren de Aragua street gang. U.S. immigration officials rounded him up earlier this year with hundreds of Venezuelan men and sent him to El Salvador's notorious CICAT prison. They were freed as part of a prisoner swap that was complicated by power plays between U.S. officials. In Romero's words, his 125 days at CICAT were an encounter with torture and death. Many of our fellows have wounds from the nightsticks. They have fractured ribs, fractured fingers and toes, marks from the handcuffs. Others have marks on their chests and their face from being shot with rubber bullets. Of course, he had known nothing about the international support he had received. He told Reuters, "It fills me with so much peace, so much comfort, so much tranquility that I was never alone from day one. There were many people who worried for me." U.S. Congress member Robert Garcia was one of them. The gay Californian led several fellow Democrats demanding protective action by Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. No solace there. Garcia celebrated Romero's release in a social media post saying, "We are working to make sure he's safe. He never should have been sent to the CICAT prison, and he still deserves due process. We won't stop fighting for him." Immigrant Defenders Law Center is seeking Romero's relocation to another country.
Finally, say what you will about former Rowan County, Kentucky clerk Kim Davis, but she is, if nothing else, persistent. She's now asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review an ongoing appeal of the court-ordered damages from a lawsuit by the gay couple whose marriage license she denied, and to overturn its 2015 federal marriage equality Obergefell decision. Davis spent 5 days in jail 10 years ago for contempt of court after refusing to issue a marriage license to David Ermold and David Moore, citing her devout Christian beliefs. The couple sued, and the clerk was ordered to pay them $100,000 in damages and $260,000 in legal fees to the couple's attorneys. She lost her re-election bid in 2018. The infamously anti-queer Liberty Council continues to represent Davis. In February, a 3-judge panel of the Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit rejected her claim that her freedom of speech was being violated. The Supreme Court had already refused to hear Davis's appeal in 2020, but on July 24th, she filed a request for the justices to review the damages award. It goes on to ask the court to reverse Obergefell and to return the regulation of civil marriage to each individual state. The Liberty Council was no doubt encouraged to think that overturning Obergefell is possible by Justice Clarence Thomas. He suggested such a reconsideration in his 2022 concurrence with the Dobbs decision that overturned the 50-year-old Roe v. Wade ruling on reproductive rights. The Respect for Marriage Act does offer equality advocates some comfort. President Joe Biden signed the federal law to protect the civil marriage rights of U.S. same-gender couples in 2022. Of course, that law could be struck down by the High Court.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending July 26th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
We got long stories.
Short stories.
Art stories.
Sports stories.
Books about the wild, wild west.
Yeehaw!
We've even got some hairy tales.
It's hard to choose which ones are best.
So hard!
We got silly books.
Sad books.
Good books.
Bad books.
They're all great in their way.
But whichever one you choose, hey, you just can't lose. Come on and read a book today.
Last time on This Way Out, Allison Lee of Pan America Los Angeles warned about the explosion of book bans across the United States.
This is not just about books. This is about, you know, really the marginalization of LGBTQ voices, of Black voices, of women's voices. This is about whose stories get to be told.
Some of those marginalized stories got to be told at a Penn-supported presentation highlighting endangered authors. This Way Out's Jason Jen participated in the reading event and takes us behind the scenes to meet the organizer and one of the writers in the crosshairs.
Ban the dictionary.
Ban the dictionary.
And ban the Bible.
Ban the Bible.
Think of all the minds and hearts they are infecting. Ban the books.
Ban the books.
Ban all the books.
Ban all the books.
Don't fill each dainty head with stuff we've never read. 'Cause our precious little angels who play violent video games and send each other nude selfies need protecting.
Ban all those books.
It's overwhelming, is what it is, that 10,000 books were banned across the country last year.
You're listening to Hank Henderson, the founder of Homocentric, an influential monthly reading series for LGBTQ plus writers and performers that existed for over a decade in Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen. When Henderson was approached to organize a reading event for the City of West Hollywood's 2025 WeHo Arts Pride, he thought about creating the event Banned Camp to address the recent staggering rise in banned books across America.
I said, I would like to have banned authors from Los Angeles, like Abdi and Francesca. And at that time, I had not contacted anyone. I was just pulling names out of the air. So for it to end up being an event with those two and Allison Lee from Penn USA, It was terrific. And then the fact that you and Stephen Raines were also participants evened it out and gave it a different kind of depth. A large majority of the books that are being banned are queer books, and they're being targeted by organizations that just go online. Abdi's book was listed as one of the top 100 young adult novels of all time, I think, by Time Magazine last year. That's a great example of the type of list that these Mothers for Liberty, I call them something else. I say that they're Moms Against Liberty. So I don't know what the real name of the group is, but that's the type of list that they would go to. And they would go to that list and find all of the books on there that had anything to do with being queer, being gay, lesbian, trans, written by someone of those categories, and then just summarily going to a library saying, we find these offensive. And there are also school boards in towns that were supported by right-wing legal organizations that offered to pay for their legal fees and do pro bono work with them. Fayetteville, Arkansas came up in a lot that I read. They're a very organized town, and they have banned dozens and dozens and dozens of books. Like you and I, if we got together and had a banned books event, you know, we can get some really subversive and throw it out there and say, this stuff has been banned and it shouldn't be because of free speech. But there are other parts of the country that can go and say, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings has been banned. To Kill a Mockingbird has been banned. That's when you can really start to change people's minds without being a queer political activist. So I think that having a banned book week gives a national window to all types of books. And gives that the opportunity for those books to be talked about and discussed.
Banned Book Week highlights the importance of literary freedom and open access. It takes place this year from October 5th through 11th. The week has taken place annually since 1982, after a noticeable surge in the challenges to books in libraries, bookstores, and schools in years prior. The surge of the 1980s book bans can be correlated to the 1979 forming of the Moral Majority by Jerry Falwell, two names quite familiar in the history of LGBTQ+ persecution. And while that particular Christian fundamentalist movement disbanded in 1989, its ethos has remained active in other ways and is greatly responsible for the aims of the current administration and Project 2025. Although exact numbers don't exist on how many books were banned in the 1980s, the growing trend was impossible to ignore. It wasn't until 1990 that specific numbers and data on book challenges were recorded by the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. The entire decade from 1990 to 2000 recorded 6,364 banned books, which equates to 636 yearly average. That's a far cry from 2024's 10,000 plus. Two of the participants of the Homocentric Bandcamp event read from their own challenge books, including Francesca Leah Block, award-winning author of the popular young adult series Dangerous Angels. Her books, Weetsie Bat and Baby Bebop, are frequent targets of book challenges. Back in 2009, members of the Christian Civil Liberties Union in Wisconsin went so far as to ask permission for her books to be publicly burned. Although published 6 years ago without contention, Abdi Nazemian's coming-of-age novel, Like a Love Story, was recently banned in several states. Here, Nazemian speaks about his book and its place in the conversation about book bans.
It's called Like a Love Story, and it's the story of three teenagers in New York City in 1989 and 1990 who together become involved in the AIDS activism of the era. It is a love letter to ACT UP, also to Madonna, to all the activists and artists who I consider the saviors of my life, who kind of fought for me to be able to have the life of abundance I have now. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is because the kind of queer history that I lived through and that saved me is never taught in schools. And this book is taught in schools. And I think that really scares people, which is why they're banning it. It's banned statewide in Utah and in many districts around the country. And to me, there's many emotions that brings up. I mean, first and foremost, it's just really depressing because I think I speak for many young adult authors when I say we write these books because we don't want teenagers to feel the stigma and shame we felt. And how else is there but shame to take the banning of art? Like, if you're banned from being spoken about in schools, it's because who you are is shameful. And that is just terrible. And also it's enraging because it stops the flow of communication and conversation. And to me, art is all about breaking down those borders. It's all about creating empathy and communication. And I've had such vibrant discussions and warm discussions with the schools I visit about shared history. Sometimes it's with queer kids who need to see themselves, and sometimes it's with straight kids who need to understand a different version of history that they haven't been taught. And we always have to ask ourselves when we're shining a light on banned books, why are they banned? There's always a reason, whether it's because they explore and expose a history of racism in this country and in the world, or a guide to how to fight back the way our community did in the 80s and 90s. It's all about how we create community to fight back against the forces of repression and authoritarianism. And I think that really scares people to give young people the tools to fight back. So, you know, I urge anyone who's interested in banned books to read the books. And if you have young children, read books with your children, talk through these themes with them. I have teenagers myself, so I speak from experience. It's really beautiful to shine a light on history with your kids, especially your own, and to teach them.
Number 63, high school. There may be no harder place to be queer than high school, a place of bullies and slurs, a place steeped in rituals of heterosexuality. Who's dating who? Who kissed who? Who will be homecoming king and queen? Who will be your prom date? And you have to play along, because if you don't, your difference has a spotlight on it. But high school ends. Remember that, even when it feels eternal. And when it ends, there are places to go. The Village, Provincetown, San Francisco. Pockets of cities and towns where boys take boys to dances and dance their nights away, writhing their bodies against each other in a primal effort to shed all the trauma of their past. Places where girls settle down with girls. Places where boys can dress like girls on the street and get high fives instead of fists against their gorgeous faces. Maybe someday high school will change. Maybe someday there can be two homecoming queens. Maybe someday girls can ask other girls to the prom. Gay boys can enter locker rooms without fear. But if it doesn't, then just remember that high school ends and that there is another life waiting for you over the rainbow. Number 76, Madonna. She is not ashamed, and therein lies her massive power, because shame is their weapon. People who feel shame remain hidden, and that's exactly how they want us. And then along comes Madonna. She was quickly written off as a flash in the pan, a one-hit wonder, but not by the people who recognized immediately that she was not just a singer, not just a dancer, not just a performer. She was and is a revolution. Just look at the way she responded when Playboy and Penthouse ran nude photos that were taken of her when she was young and broke. She said three words, "I'm not ashamed." Those words are why her presence in the world gives me hope for the future. That more queer kids will come out sooner, that more women will feel the freedom to own their sexualities, that maybe someday shame will be something kids don't feel anymore. Before I became sick, I was out with Jose one night on a dance floor. Madonna came out and sang one song, Holiday. No one had heard of her yet, but within seconds we were communing with each other, with her, and with a new way of thinking. You can turn this world around, she sang, and she meant it. To turn the world around is to create a revolution, isn't it? She is a revolution in every sense, a radical change in a celestial body in orbit. She's turning this world around and showing us how to follow in her footsteps. I don't know if shame has a true opposite, perhaps pride, but that doesn't feel quite right. So as far as I'm concerned, the opposite of shame is Madonna. Long may she reign.
Number
When it comes to queer books, books are often banned with the charge of pornography and of being explicit. And I often hear, and I understand the impulse, authors or people who are trying to defend the book say they're not explicit. I think it's very important to not defend books against banning by saying they're not explicit or don't include sex. Like A Love Story does have scenes of sex and sexuality, and I thought that was the responsible choice because it is a book about HIV and AIDS. I was not taught same sex as a young person by anybody but Madonna, saving my life. It's really important for us to say that teenagers have to learn about sex and sexuality through science classes and sex ed classes, but all through storytelling, because that's how we process things best. And I'm very proud of writing a book that includes scenes like two gay men speaking to two gay teens about gay sex, like a Birds and the Bees talk that I never got to have. That matters. We have to model these kinds of conversations. So I do think it's really important when we're talking about books for young adults and teenagers to say that it is developmentally appropriate to include sexuality.
We've got a special word. We're gonna have a celebration all across the world in every nation.
We had a splendid turnout. I thought that the event was great overall, and I was really, really surprised at the support that I got from Penn and Allison.
You can hear more about the Band Camp event, the history of the homocentric LGBTQ plus literary series, and hear further excerpts from Like a Love Story by Abney Nazimian, along with other readings of Band Camp from me and poet Stephen Rains, by tuning into This Way Out's extended podcast episode, available on the website at thiswayout.org and our associated podcast channels. Visit abneynazimian.com for more about the author and pen.org for more information about literary freedom and the rise in banned books across the nation. This has been the second of a two-part series on banned books. As author Isaac Asimov is quoted, "Any book worth banning is a book worth reading." For This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Tanya Kane Perry and Michael LeBeau and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Jason Jen. Huey Lewis in the News, Carla Olbrecht and Lauren Mayer, and Madonna performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KSPC Claremont, California, WVEX Midland, Michigan, CJAM Windsor, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.